We're out of milk.
Are you kidding me?
Un, deux, trois.
What is art? Is this art or this?
I've been accused of being pretentious my whole life, rightfully so. I always encourage young people to be pretentious.
Norway. Fish fingers, no. Fenders, Norway. We know a certain fjord in Norway.
In order to be a great artist, you simply have to be a great artist. There's nothing to learn.
Skummakultur på studentradioen i Bergen.
Denne sendingen blir litt annerledes enn en vanlig sending. Fredag 9. mars og lørdag 10. mars arrangerte nemlig Skummakultur i lag med Trigger Bergen to livesendinger i forbindelse med Borealis, en festival for eksperimentell musikk. Og i denne sendingen her får du noen av høydepunktene fra de to dagene. Først ut får du høre fra kunstnerisk leder selv, Peter Meanwell.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, good morning, how are you?
Can you describe for us what the festival Borealis is?
Sure, yeah, it's a big question. I like to think of it as kind of an open space for people to experiment with sound and music. I mean, at its most open. We call it a festival for experimental music because that puts as few restrictions on it as we can. I think often with music festivals, people think about it, they look at a program lineup and they're like, great, I love Metallica and Aha, I'll go to this festival, I'll buy a ticket. Whereas Borealis, you know, we try and give platforms to people who do all sorts of crazy music and maybe people haven't heard of them. So we talk about it more like an art gallery. So if you think about an art gallery, you go to an opening to see what's new, you don't know what it is yet, and then you have a conversation and you make your mind up about it. So like, we like to think of Borealis as kind of like a gallery for sound, so people come and they're like, okay, crazy, or I hated it, because that's also okay, or I loved it, or you know, all these things, but to come and have the experience first.
Yeah. Do you think people are more open-minded going to a kind of festival that Borealis is?
Do you mean the people who come, are they more open-minded, or are they more open-minded after they leave the festival?
Both.
Maybe after. That was a better question. Yeah. Are they more open-minded after?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, on a general level, I think one of the roles of art, and I include kind of new music, like experimental music in this as art, is to, it can challenge people and put them in a situation that they may not have thought of, give them stuff to think about or experiences or listening events or, you know, to just push their limits a bit. And maybe they feel a little bit uncomfortable. Maybe they see something they've never seen before and have to react to that. So, I think there is a small social political role for art in general that allows people to kind of have more open minds, right? And it pushes them to... my parents are here. Like, they came from England to come to the festival. And they come to concerts, and some of them, they're like, I didn't like that, or I felt uncomfortable, or I didn't understand. And then we have a conversation about it, and then like, okay, I never thought about it like that. And then that, so for me, this is a really kind of valuable process, not just for my parents, but just, you know, the art challenges us as a society. If we only listened to the same song that we knew, that great Aha record, right, then, you know, we would, maybe when we're faced with other difference in our lives or other challenges or newness or people we didn't recognize or whatever, then we would be less ready for that. So somewhere, and this is not like a political statement, but somewhere there is, I think, art has a role in keeping us flexible, mentally flexible.
Yeah, you commenced as our artist director in 2015.
Yeah.
What has been your vision for the festival throughout these years?
So I think the vision for it has been that I want to create a space where the art is free to be as radical as possible, radical as it needs to be, right? So when artists come in, they're not told, okay, can you make a piece that's going to get us a big audience? Or can you make us a piece that will get us headlines in the newspaper? We say to the people who we think are doing interesting work from Bergen, from Norway, from around the world, can you make a new piece of music or present a concert here that's going to be interesting, that's going to be inspiring for you? And then we work really hard as a festival to create a frame around that art that communicates it to an audience. And that frame should be as accessible as possible. So the art does not have to be easy or accessible or whatever. It just has to be what it is. And then we have to create this space so people can come to it. And my biggest, like, I guess, idea is, because I love all these artists, right? I mean, I spend all my year listening to them, talking to them, programming them, making this kind of program. But then my biggest fear is like that somebody's like, okay, you know what? They see the poster and they like the poster, okay. And they're like, okay, but they've never been to an experimental music concert before. They've never been to Borellis before. And my fear is that they get to the door of the concert venue and we haven't made it welcoming. And they feel like they're out of their depth or they're in the wrong place or that nobody wants them there. And they say, you know what, I'm not going to go in. I don't want to make that decision. Because then they don't come into contact with the art. And I think art has this kind of potential to be entertaining and funny and difficult, like we said. But it also has this kind of transformative cultural power. But I think if the festival stands in the way, the festival infrastructure stands in the way of people getting to the art, then that's a problem. So it's like great curation, brilliant music, brilliant art, brilliant people, and then a festival that is welcoming to everybody so people can take that step. And it's still fine if they hate it. Do you know what I mean? But like they've come in, they've had the experience, and then they've decided they hate it, then that's totally valid. So it's just, that's I guess, at the core of what we've tried to do, the vision of it.
You talked about diversity and gender.
Yeah.
Because Borealis is a very gender balanced festival. Was this on purpose?
Yeah, I mean, Bergen has a very gender balanced population, so
it wasn't it wasn't a challenge.
No, it's certainly a challenge. I mean, it's a silly answer, but you know, it's I think that a festival can be a great way of dreaming up a society that you want to see, or that we feel we should live in, and there are amazing artists and composers of all genders making work. And so the question is not should we do it, but why wouldn't we do it, I think. And it's important for us that we represent, it's actually a curatorial decision. It's about representing different creative perspectives on any form. So not just saying, okay, well, there's one way to do orchestra music, or there's one way to do electronic music. And people from different parts of the world, people with different gender identities, people from different economic class, people with different ethnicity, have different perspectives on what music can be. And so it makes it just a more interesting festival to have a lot of those different perspectives in. And obviously, since we started, Borealis has had a pretty 50-50 gender balance. And at the beginning, we thought, okay, you know what? We don't want to make this a conversation about gender, because we don't want anyone to think that we're booking artists because of their gender, because we don't do that. But we did think it was important. And then after this happened at the beginning, and the conversation has moved, I think, culturally and socially, and you know, Me Too, Time's Up, these kind of movements, actually, we thought, well, we have a role in society, and actually we need to make a statement about why this is important and why we're doing it. So now we're saying, you know, we committed the festival formally in its articles of association to have a gender balance going forward. And that makes it super easy. I mean, there's no like, oh, shit, we forgot, sorry, we didn't book any women. Oh, well, we'll do it next year. It's just we think about it from the beginning. And like I say, you know, there's 28 events at Borealis. There's hundreds of amazing people doing this work. So it's really not, it's in no way a compromise on quality to think about diversity. And I would say that it makes the kind of curation more interesting. It raises the level, the quality level of the festival to have more perspectives.
Yeah, do you think the festival can build bridges between people, like from the mainstream audience to the audience that are know more experimental music?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think it's, you know, we had a talk yesterday, and because we have, you may see around town these amazing multicolored geometric sponge people that's part of a project. Maybe some of your listeners have spotted them. But you know, we had this big conversation about this project yesterday, and somebody said, but hang on, like if you do this stuff, like if you put cranes in Festplatten or you do stuff outside of the concert hall, aren't you disrespecting your audience by saying, oh, they're not smart enough to get the difficult music? Which was a really good question, and it's something we have to think about. But I think you know, everybody has a different perspective. They think about music in a different way. We want to present the work and be open to people so that they can come in, right? So it's not about saying we have to make the music easier to get a bigger audience or to get to people who've never heard this music. People can come to it on their own. We need to give them maybe tools to help them, and stuff like that is, you know, program notes, a program book that gives you context to the art so you can come to it on your own terms and do that. So, but you know, we have this project now with experimental musicians from America, from Norway, and three crane drivers from Åsane, right?
Now, so cool.
Right? So, and one of those crane drivers, it turns out, is like a secret experimental music maker.
Yeah. But I think it's so cool that if you're not like underestimating people, that these crane drivers, they could be a part of this experimental piece, and people seeing the performance on Festplassen, I think many of them will have a very good experience, even though they don't know the context, or maybe they will find out afterwards. But it's, yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is around labeling and kind of the language we use. Do you know what I mean? And like in the last 70 years, you know, since John Cage's piece, silent piece, right, where he's in a concert hall and he opens the piano and then he sits there in silence, right? And everyone's like, what the hell's going on? And then he closes the piano and then there's a new movement. He opens the lid and doesn't do anything and it's all silence, right? So this is like this super famous moment in music history where somebody went to play a piece of music and didn't play any music. And the whole point of that piece was that actually all the sound around us is the music that we're living in. Okay, so that what he didn't change music, he didn't destroy music. He just kind of asked people to think of different sounds as music. And that's noise music, you know, a lot of experimental music over the last 70 years has taken this idea of saying music is not being destroyed, we're just kind of moving the edges a little bit around to where it should be.
Peter Meanwell ble intervjuet av Solveig Egeberg og Oskar Fugelsnes.
Studenter i Bergen live fra Borealis.
En festival for
experimentell musikk.
Experimentell musikk.
Studentradioen sender intervjuer, videoer og livemusikk live fra Landmark i samarbeid med Borealis, en festival for experimentell musikk.
Natasha Deals er kunstner og en del av ensemble Pamplemos, som var ansvarlig for at tre kraner danset på festplassen på søndag 11. mars.
So, if you don't mind me asking, why cranes? What made it so? Why did you choose it? Was it any appealing?
Well, I've just really loved cranes. I just have an attraction to cranes for a long time, but also just kind of on a more general level, they're ubiquitous. You know, we see them in any developing or like city that's having good economic progress, but we don't really notice them, and they're these structures in the sky that are, you know, really they draw the skyline, and I just wanted them to be at the center of a piece of art because I think it's also really interesting to interact with people that are not necessarily in the experimental music world, which is sometimes very insular, and so it's really nice to reach outside of that world and work with people that know nothing about us, and I know nothing about them, and that's been really fun.
Yeah, and I was also wondering, what were the crane drivers' reaction when you approached them and said, "Hey, do you want to do a performance piece?"
Oh man, they've been so great. I mean, it's the only reason we've been able to do this. Helga is he's the original owner of the crane company, but he sold it. But he was always really into experimental sound when he was a kid. You know, he just loved listening to strange sounds and just going around and exploring sounds, like if he hit the cranes, how they would sound and things like this. And so he was just really excited about the idea. And actually the name comes partly from him, because we had this butterfly idea, and then he told us about his band that he used to have, which was called Papillon, which is like just such a great coincidence that we hadn't really planned. And so that's one of the places the name comes from.
Because these are they're just ordinary crane drivers. It's just him who had the musical background. Is that right?
Well, I don't know, ordinary crane drivers. They're wonderful people.
Of course.
Yeah, and
but not
I mean,
performance crane drivers.
Well, they're musicians. I think that everybody has a creative background, and it's really great to be able to re-explore that in this kind of context, because the crane drivers all have ideas about the piece, you know, and they're really excited to talk about it, and it's really, I really love interacting with people that don't think about this stuff every day, all day, because it's like really fresh ideas and, you know, just a new fun approach to writing and performing music.
So the crane drivers actually have like an input, they'll tell you like how it should be and work on it?
Well, we've definitely had a lot of conversations about it, and they've been very inspiring with their ideas, for sure.
Right, yeah. Right. But you're like the main director, though. You have the last word?
Well, you know, I don't really like to be the boss. I like to work with people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
So is it just like the freshness of ideas that's different from people who work with art all the time? Like, what's it like working with people who are mainly crane drivers as opposed to mainly artists?
Well, I mean, artists think about art all the time and practicalities very rarely, and crane drivers think about practicalities often and less about, you know, how the crane looks when it's moving around. But so it's really interesting to sort of recontextualize that and have them think about the way that they look. And it's really interesting for me to have to think about all these practicalities because I'm like not a practical person, as most anybody that knows me will tell you. And so that's been actually really challenging for me, is to think, oh, okay, there's all these safety issues. There's just the sheer amount of time it takes for something that is 17 meters long to move you know, one side of the stage to the other.
Because you can have an idea of how it's supposed to do it, but there's actually like, the drivers have the knowledge of how it works.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Did you get any like disappointments? Like you just can't do this, or were they positive?
There's things that I couldn't do, but I don't think it was really disappointing. It was just sort of part of the process, you know. Like I think that's always really interesting when you're making a piece, to just figure out how it's going to work. And you know, you have this idea, but if the idea was just the way that it was, exactly how it was, then there's no challenge and there's no development or progress that happens while you're making the piece, and that is the really fun part, you know.
Do you have a part of it that is your greatest achievement of this? What's your favorite part, you know?
Of the piece?
One part when, yeah, everybody were like, yes, we got the good way to do it or something.
I mean, honestly, the piece is like that
the
achievement.
Whole piece.
It's like, wow, we did this. This is crazy. We're going to have three cranes in Festplatz, and that's like, oh my God. And my favorite part of the piece is that all of the kids in Bergen decorated the butterfly with shirts that they collected. There was an original idea, which Brian helped me come up with these ideas, of just decorating the butterfly with garbage, which is something that's very easy to do in New York, for example, because there's garbage everywhere, and it's actually like, you know, it's not, yeah, and it's just really easy to find usable garbage, but you guys are much better about that than we are. So so anyway, we collected, all the kids in Bergen collected t-shirts under the direction of Essia, who's been wonderful this whole time, and Nikolai. And they decorated the panels of the butterfly wings with shirts, which is so great to get them all involved. And a lot of them are going to come to the concert, and that's going to be really fun.
Yeah, it's going to be, the concert is on Sunday at Festplassen. Is that that kind of stage where it's just out in the open? There are going to be people who are just walking by who aren't necessarily there to see an art piece. Did you like have that in mind when you were composing it?
Yeah, I love that idea. Yeah, I mean, I wish that all of our concerts could be outside in the middle of town, but it's not very practical, especially in a rainy city like this. But but yeah, I absolutely love the idea of something going on that you have no idea what it is, and just being like, whoa, what's that weird thing? Maybe I'll go check it out. And it's free, which I also love.
Natasha Diels ble intervjuet av Randi Hegernes Eilertsen og Jørgen Nikolai Bratsberg Solum.
Well, definitely none of them are mastered, and that's part of the key, is if I tried to master anything, then I really wouldn't be able to do what I think of as usually the end goal, which is sharing this with people and doing public presentations of it and getting people together to share in the art making experience. And that's for sure what has to happen for me all the time. Mastery tends to get in the way of that ultimate end goal for me. So, and it's quite clear aesthetically that mastery isn't the goal. Getting something done, something that has hopefully an interesting idea behind it, something that's hopefully connecting the dots for me between worlds of experimental music, worlds of music that go beyond experimental music, and especially pointing to and trying to find a way of dealing with all the social situations that surround many different types of music making. And really that's what's behind all of the stuff that I'm building, all of the scores that I'm making, all of the sounds that I'm presenting, is trying to figure out some way that, you know, to be thinking about the communities that I'm involved in, and what I can do unique and within those contexts. Yeah. All kinds of things into certain situations. You can force people into certain situations, but you can force mechanical objects into certain situations too. But for me, I'm always trying to remind myself that I really want to know what you're happiest with, and what is unique about you, human or you, mechanical object, and what can we do together to do something. So it's like a point of investigation is the starting point of like, what is the thing that makes it move? How can we do something together? The way you like to move and the way I might like to hear something also, with some suggestions of things that we could hear. Hi, I'm Brian Jacobs. I'm part of Ensemble Pamplemousse, here to perform on the opening night of Borealis.
Brian Jacobs er også en del av Ensemble Pamplemousse, og ble intervjuet av Randi Hegernes Eilertsen og Katrine Bjelland. Intervjuet finnes også i videoformat og filmet og redigert av Michelle Doe.
Studentradioen Bergen, live fra Borealis.
En festival for eksperimentell musikk.
Eksperimentell musikk.
Srip, 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 srip. Srip, srip, srip. Srip, 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 srip.
Vi sender fortsatt høydepunkter fra livesendingen vår om Borealis, en festival for eksperimentell musikk. Kunstneren Sue Tompkins var i Bergen for første gang.
So you're a visual and sound artist based in Glasgow, is that right?
Yeah.
And could you try to explain to our listeners and our viewers also what it is exactly you do for a living?
That's really good. I always hesitate, but I suppose I should say, I'm an artist. It just took me a long time to, maybe I still don't even do it, but I don't try to sort of define what type of artist I am, really. But I studied painting about 20 years ago, a bit longer than that, in Glasgow. So I wouldn't describe it as painting training, but I come from a sort of visual art background. But by the time I left art school, I was, struggling to be, you know, I didn't understand painting at all, didn't know what to paint. So I'd always been interested in lots of reading and texts and writing in general and music and just things that I couldn't really see at the time how they'd come through in my work, but eventually just became the only thing that I could actually do, really, or felt happy doing. So I suppose I would describe that I've worked with, a lot of my work comes from writing initially, and that has led into, live performances. And, sorry. That's my
phone. It's okay.
Live performances and some collaborative things and music and...
Maybe the most well-known part of your practice is this performance poetry, or how you use words and language.
Yeah.
In kind of a free association flow of words. And is there a specific point in your career or your life, personal life, where you the words found you or you found the words?
Oh, that's a really good question. I can think of a point, and it actually probably stemmed from a classic moment when you really don't know what you're doing. And I was in fourth year of painting at the art school, and I just, as I said before, I just didn't know what to paint. So I was always just hanging around other places like libraries or the art school not bar, but, you know, just places where you didn't have to be in the studio. So a turning point, I think, would be just some link between trying to get the written word off the page and make it into sound. So I started to use, like, a little dictaphone, little recording machine. Didn't even have an iPhone then or anything like that. So, and it was very, just really private, subjective experience, really, or moment where I would just try to write something and then maybe weeks or months later just make a recording of my own voice reading it out, which, again, had no direction. There was no intention. It was just I needed to do that. And I don't really know why that is, but that was a real turning point, because for me it helped to liberate in some way. I didn't want to make books or write poetry or actually be really tied to working with text within a sort of visual art gallery context. So it felt really liberating and freeing to, even though at that point it was really private. So then a few years later, where it was literally just someone who runs a gallery who I now work with, the Modern Institute in Glasgow, and Toby Webster, who is the director of the gallery, he just asked me to do a performance. So whether he, you know, I hadn't done a performance before, so I just remember thinking, shit, what, I don't, you know, what, I don't do performances.
Yeah.
But I just said yes instead of no to that. It was probably just a text message or an email at that point. And I just remember saying yeah, and then thinking, God, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Do you think, like, he saw something in you before you did yourself? If you've never did a performance before?
I actually, without sounding too sort of emotional about it, or sort of, but I think he probably... I think a good gallery, someone who runs a gallery, they're good at that. You know, they artists need help in some ways, I think, and vice versa. Gallerists need artists who need artists. So, you know, he's challenging, and I remember thinking, God, that's the challenge. That's what am I going to do? But I find that, and still quite a sort of good point of how to make work, just feeling. I don't know about under pressure, but just, you know, excited and challenged, rather than, oh, wow, I've just got to do this again, or this is what I do, you know, sort of something that actually where you feel excited and challenged, I think, is really important. And so that was my first live performance, and that was in a little gallery in Edinburgh, and then went on to do solo performances after that.
Sue Tompkins, ble intervjuet av Solveig Egeberg og Oscar Fugelsnes.
Skal være, for det kan være, det opp til hver enkelt nesten. Jeg mener jo, for meg så eksperimentell musikk bare rett og slett en plass hvor alt lov, og folk utfordrer og oppdager nye ting, og veldig gjerne finner nye måter å gjøre ting på. Steder hvor absolutt alt lov. Og jeg synes det veldig bra sagt det, at du skal bare på en måte få en opplevelse, om den fin eller dårlig, det får på en måte stå sin prøve. Men det at det med å utfordre i hvert fall, det synes jeg veldig viktig. Ganske dårlig på å utfordre seg selv i vår tid i hvert fall. Folk søker veldig lite mot noe nytt. Folk går bare til det gamle kjente. Så da er det veldig fint med en festival som Borealis, da, hvor du kan gå på konserter, og du vet ikke hva du får. men du vet at du blir utfordret på et eller annet vis da. Og selv om du ikke liker noe, så er jo det en opplevelse i seg selv, og det er jo noe du kan gå og tenke på, og som kan shake things up litt i deg selv, rett og slett, tror jeg. Og det tror jeg folk trenger, og for det virker som folk ikke tør det så mye nå til dags, å gå dit og gå og se noe som de ikke vet hvordan kommer til å bli, og som ikke låter akkurat som på plata, og hvor ting er usikkert, rett og slett. Stefan Meidel, og er en eksperimentell gitarrist og komponist som bor i Bergen.
Stefan Meidel ble intervjuet av Christian Tvedt. Dette intervjuet finnes også i videoform, og det ble filmet og klippt av Michelle Doe.
Skumma kultur.
Jenny Berger Myhre lager musikk av lyder hun finner, tar opp, og så mikser sammen på helt nye måter.
For jeg synes det er veldig kult at du faktisk da lager sanger fra hjemmelagde instrumenter.
Ja, det er hjemmelagde instrumenter, men også instrumenter fra hjemmet.
Instrumenter
så
fra hjemmet?
Så jeg har ikke laget alle sammen selv. Jeg spiller på platespiller og kassettspiller, som jo er sånn hjemmeinstrumenter fra hjemmet. Og så har jeg laget noen selv.
Ja.
Hvordan bruker du for eksempel en CD-spiller som instrument?
Jeg bruker ikke CD-spiller, men jeg bruker platespiller.
Ja, platespiller.
Da bruker jeg det... egentlig bare sånn som man gjør når man er hjemme i stua si, at jeg setter på plater og velger hvor på plata jeg vil spille. Jeg har noen utrolig fine fugleplater som jeg liker veldig godt å bruke.
Oi.
Veldig fine lyder som det er fint å mikse sammen med andre ting.
Og apropos lyder, du har da også en del sånne lydklipp i sangene dine, og det er jo ikke vanlig lydklipp, det er jo da lydklipp fra ditt hverdagsliv.
Ja, det er feltopptak.
Feltopptak er det?
Mhm. Det er det man kaller det da, i musikkverden.
Ja.
Men det er bare rett og slett lydopptak fra hverdagen, samtalefragmenter og øvingsopptak.
Ja. Så hvordan går det da fram når du da har disse forskjellige lydene og musikken og disse opptakene? Hvordan går det da fram å lage en sang?
Jeg jobber på en måte litt sånn som det man kan kalle en collage da. At jeg har ulike lydfiler, og så prøver jeg å sette dem sammen på en måte som enten forsterker innholdet i en av lydfilene, eller som på en eller annen måte skaper en kontrast i innholdet.
Så vil du si nesten om at du er på et kjøkken, da?
Ja, når jeg spiller live, så har jeg på en måte satt opp live-oppsettet mitt som ulike stasjoner på et bord, sånn at jeg har en stasjon som er platespilleren, en stasjon som er kassettspilleren, en med en laptop, med en kontroller, og så har jeg prøvd å gjøre det på en måte som at jeg frigjør rom til å improvisere. Så det blir litt som å være på et kjøkken og lage mat. At du har en stasjon der du kutter grønnsaker, og så har du en gryte som du må røre i for å passe på at ting ikke svir seg. Og så har man en vask der man fyller opp vann og koker det. Så jeg føler at det er liksom satt opp på en måte som vi både tvinger frem med det at jeg må aktivt ta valg hele veien, sånn at det ikke er en død eller liksom statisk konsert, da. Men at det også liksom gir rom til å improvisere samtidig som jeg vet hvor jeg skal.
Stilig.
Ja.
Så dette er det vi kommer til å selge på Borealis, ikke sant?
Ja, det stemmer. Ja. I kveld klokka 11.
Og jeg lurer på, hvordan ble du involvert med Borealis?
Jeg fikk rett og slett en melding fra Peter Minwell, som lurer på om vi kunne møtes. Han var interessert i å høre hva jeg drev med. Han er en utrolig sånn, oppsøkende artistic director, som jeg synes er kjempekult. At han ikke bare liksom, lener seg på de han kjenner, og at det kommer til å gå fint, men han hadde hørt om meg, og så ville han møtes. Og så, ja, halvannet år senere, så får jeg spille her. Det er veldig stas.
Stilig. Og jeg tenkte også på, når du spiller og lager sanger, hva er det du hovedsakelig da legger vekt på?
Musikken min handler jo veldig mye om minner og nostalgi, og er en slags sånn bearbeiding av den melankolien som ligger latent i mennesker, fordi vi hele tiden knytter oss til ting som har skjedd da. Og lytteevnen vår eller det auditive har en utrolig sånn evne til å virkelig liksom pushe på sånne minner i hodet, på samme måte som lukt. At det har en eller annen sånn der, en slags momentant virkning da. Ja. Og så i musikken min så prøver jeg på en måte å bruke det, men se litt mer liksom objektivt på det, eller å klare å liksom undersøke hva det i de tingene som gjør at det vekker disse minnene og følelsene. Og samtidig, disse opptakene jo personlige for meg, men for de andre som lytter, så har det jo kanskje, det første gang de hører dem. De har ikke vært der hvor de har tatt opp dette opptaket. Men samtidig som mennesker så har vi også sånn assosiativ evne, som gjør at vi setter ting sammen som et slags puslespill. Så hvis vi hører noe, så setter vi det inn i en sammenheng, og hjernen prøver liksom å sortere ut. Så det liksom en lek med det der, den evnen hjernen har til å sortere ut ting, og også til å liksom prøve å skape mening.
Ja, og skape bilder nesten også.
Ja, det jo veldig visuelt. Man ser for seg ting når man hører noe, og det liksom mye av det den musikken spiller på.
Hvilken egenskap er du ser etter når du bestemmer deg for å lage et feltopptak av noe?
Vanligvis jobber jeg egentlig med feltopptak litt som jeg jobber med fotografi. At jeg har med meg opptakeren min, og så tar jeg et opptak når jeg får en sånn dette et øyeblikk jeg har lyst til å ivareta, eller å ta vare på. Sånn som jeg har gjort med fotografi siden jeg var tenåring, egentlig. Så jeg mener en slags sånn samling. Og av og til så har jeg en klar idé om at jeg har lyst på dette lydopptaket, og da går jeg ut og så finner jeg det. Riktig situasjon og riktig tid og sted. Eller helt sånn teknisk. Altså jeg har lyst på lyden av vann som renner i en bekk, og da går jeg og henter det, på en måte.
Ja. Mm. Så dette da... For du er fotograf også, sa du.
Ja.
Så det, den musikken, altså musikken du lager og bilder, det går litt hånd i hånd, det egentlig?
Ja, absolutt. Det har på en måte vært en sånn parallell aktivitet for meg siden jeg var 14-15 eller sånt. Da jeg fikk mine første kameraer og ble gående rundt og knipset alt og alle hele tiden. Så fikk jeg også en lydopptaker, og så falt det seg helt naturlig å bruke den på samme måte. Så jeg har liksom tatt opp bare... hverdagslige øyeblikk egentlig, og så latt dem vokse i arkivet og bli noe mer da. Det jeg lager liksom, jeg bruker veldig mye opptak, eller jeg tar ofte opp øvingsopptak, eller sånn uferdige låter da. Og jeg er veldig interessert i det der uferdige, fordi jeg synes det et eller annet veldig sånn, det har en veldig sånn sterk nerve da, det som uferdig, eller det som spontant.
Ja.
Så jeg liker veldig godt å bruke det, og så på en måte tvinge meg selv til å la ting være litt feil, eller litt ikke helt perfekt da, ikke helt ferdig.
Jenny Berger Myhre ble intervjuet av Randi Hegernes Eilertsen og Jørgen Nikolai Brattberg Solum. I tillegg til de som stilte opp for intervju og de som gjorde intervjuene, må vi også takke Guro Vågan og Katrine Bjelland, som var produsenter de to dagene, og en spesiell takk til musikkredaktør Christian Tvedt. Jeg er Åse Lenstad, og jeg satte sammen disse høydepunktene du nå har hørt. Takk for nå, og vi høres igjen.